interesting that we've just been speaking actually about celebrity and the adulation that we meter out to celebrities. Just recently I heard or read, I can't quite remember which, a comment that stated that scientists will be or should be the celebrities of our future. And I, for one, actually agree with that. And certainly scientists who are prepared to put their money where their mouth is and to stake their reputation on everything, because these are the guys who know what's going on and we need to listen to them. With that in mind, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome to the programme an incredible man. His name is Jonathan Lundgren. He's an entomologist, an 11-year veteran of the USDA's Agricultural Research Service, and he has actually turned whistleblower. Let's find out why. Good morning, Jonathan. I know it's early where you are.
Oh, no, not too early for this. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful to hear you. This kind of thing just it's so important. I urge people to listen. First of all, your expertise perhaps has been around bees. The issue of bees, we know, is one that's been spoken about for some time now. You need to give us a background. Bring us up to speed if you can.
Right. So, yeah, my research involves developing sort of ecologically based solutions for pest management, and then also assessing the ecological risk posed by pesticides and genetically modified crops to non-target species. And bees are certainly one of those. Those are not something we want to be killing with our pesticides.
In other words, pesticides developed to kill whatever it might be, but are killing, as if you like, collateral damage. There's that expression again.
Right, yeah. So a lot of our pest management decisions really need to bear in mind that there's oftentimes unintended consequences of using those pesticides.
Now, your employer has been?
USDA. I've worked with USDA for the last 11 years. And life was good for about the first 7 or 8 of those years. And then I started asking questions about risks of controversial pesticides, things like neonicotinoid insecticides. And this is a type of seed treatment that's found on many crop seeds in the United States. And we started looking at what other things that those seed treatments may be killing. And then the other thing that we started to ask questions about was a new form of genetic pesticide. It's called RNAi. And your listeners really need to educate themselves about that, because it's coming down the pike pretty quick here.
Can you tell us who the manufacturer of this is?
Well, I think that there's a number of people who manufacture both neonicotinoids and RNAi. Monsanto has certainly invested a lot of money into RNAi as a technology, and Bayer and Syngenta have invested a lot of money into neonicotinoids. But our agricultural system really has become dependent in certain ways on these pesticides, for better or for worse, or at least there's a perceived dependence, because the science oftentimes doesn't support their use, especially in field cropping situations like on soybeans or on corn. And now we have data on sunflowers as well. It's just farmers are being sold these products, and really there isn't a lot of basis for them being deployed into the environment.
So there isn't a lot of necessity for them, and yet the damage that they wreak is immense.
Can be quite substantial. Even though these chemistries are being used at fairly low doses, they're only coated on the seeds, they're called systemic pesticides. And so the neonicotinoids are actually taken up by the plant. But only 2 to 20% of those pesticides are actually taken up by the plant. And that really asks the question of what's happening with the other 80 to 98% of those pesticides. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to figure that out now. They're showing up in our water supply. They're showing up in plant species that weren't treated originally.
So collateral damage is quite widespread, as it seems, from what you're telling us. But let's look at the bee here. You're a bug man. You're the expert. What's so important about bees?
Bees, if you like fruits and vegetables, thank the honeybee, okay? Or thank bees and pollinators in general. Literally, ecosystems would shut down without these pollinator services. And so we really need to be conserving our pollinator species. And they're in steep decline. There's a pollinator crisis in the United States and in Europe. There's a lot of really strong science that's showing that that there's going to be some far-reaching implications of our declines in bees.
How is it impacting? What is the evidence there that we know that this is a problem?
Well, the fact that this year in the almond industry in the United States, they don't have enough, they're likely not going to have enough bees to pollinate all of the almonds. You see, our agricultural systems have become so simplified, and the only way that we can maximize their productivity is through managed pollinators. And so if we're killing off our managed pollinators, that being the honeybee, then really we're in dire straits. That should be a canary in the coal mine too.
So you say that your agriculture industry has become so sort of simplified, but it's also become right. industrialized. Now, assumedly, what you mean is that it's now huge scale farming of this particular crop or that particular crop or whatever it might be, right. in the most simple possible way, using machines over a huge area. And so, any chemical that can speed up the process of taking out a particular bug or of making a plant grow quicker, whatever it might be, is being used.
Yeah, I think that's probably a true statement. As we've farmed larger and larger plots and reduced the diversity of the different crops that we produce, this has necessitated a dependence on agrochemicals in order to maintain the productivity of those farming systems. So, for example, what we've done is we've replaced biodiversity and all of those things that biodiversity does with technology. And whenever we've done this throughout history, I mean, Mother Nature has always turned around and kicked us in the crotch. And so the reality is that the productivity of our agricultural systems is really going to be dependent on us diversifying what we're producing and working with our natural resource base as a fundamental component of our food production systems.
Now, when you were working at the USDA's Agricultural Research Unit, you were looking into the sort of side effects of pesticides. You came up with information which was essentially the results of the work that you were asked to do.
Right. And I was doing my job, yeah.
You were doing your job. What happened? Tell us what happened.
Well, the taxpayers, the beekeepers, the farmers were asking me to determine the efficacy of things like neonicotinoids and also investigate whether or not these neonicotinoids were harming other species. We discovered that the monarch butterfly, which has diminished to it's a threatened species at this point in the United States. And it used to be one of the most widespread and recognizable butterflies in North America. And we found that neonicotinoids were getting into the milkweed plants, and that they were extremely toxic to monarch caterpillars. Neonicotinoids, even though they're being used at a very low rate, they're actually in the order of 5 to 10,000 times more toxic to bees than DDT was.
That's quite worrying.
Well, it is. It is, and so. I got approval to submit the manuscript that showed this, and it's published in The Science of Nature. I would encourage your readers or your listeners to take a look. But and then it got press, and my bosses found out, and they denied the fact that they gave me approval, and then they punished me for it. They gave me a 2-week suspension for doing my job and talking to the taxpayers about the research that we were doing.
So they denied the fact that they'd given you approval to carry out that research. What did they say about the content of the research? Did they say it was lies?
They said that they didn't really comment on the content of the research. They said it was a sensitive topic and therefore required even additional approval beyond what I had already gotten. And
immediately probably lead many people to perhaps be more interested in reading it.
Exactly.
It's like stamping something top secret. You're going to make people want to read it.
If I had found that neonicotinoids had no effect on monarch butterflies, I don't believe that I would have landed in any trouble.
So you got suspended for 2 weeks. This was towards the end of last year.
This was in the beginning of 2015, yeah.
Right,
so,
okay.
And then it goes on for a long time. And the aggression continued to mount. Retaliation of the death by a thousand cuts is how me and my attorneys talk about it. Is you know, denial of travel, so I can't speak to the farmers who are asking for results of my research.
And this is because you've turned whistleblower. Had you
at this point, I had filed an official scientific integrity complaint, and then in October they were looking to try to fire me for speaking to some beekeepers. And at that point we had to file a whistleblower retaliation complaint in order to try to preserve my position.
So where does that leave you now? Where does it leave Jonathan Lundgren in terms of his job?
Going whistleblower, I had two goals. One was to allow me to continue to do the research that I want to do, and the other was to raise. I'm not alone. Within the USDA, I am not alone in this. There's a lot of scientists that are experiencing this, but none of them are standing up at this point. And I'm hoping that that by raising awareness about this, that'll help. I mean, the USDA, I was extremely successful. I am extremely successful within the USDA. I mean, I was one of their top young scientists. I got to meet the president in the White House for being one of the top young scientists in the United States.
It didn't do you much good, did it?
It went from being the golden boy to being the pariah. And as a result, I mean, we've really had to try to figure out a different way. And so we've actually started an independent research company to try to accommodate that, to try to conduct the research that I'm not allowed to do in my federal position. And the beekeepers and the farmers have been so supportive. We have a crowdfunding campaign, and the beekeepers and the farmers are deciding which kind of research that they want to see done, and the consumers as well.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about that, and we call it Blue Dasher Farm.
I think that's what's important, is that those beekeepers, farmers, and consumer, those are the ones whose voices need to be heard. However, whether you like it or not, your employer was the USDA, and the USDA is in the pocket of companies such as Monsanto, who are just immensely wealthy.
There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear within the USDA of stepping on toes, and I think that leads them to let's see how to put it, they support the bureaucracy over the mission. And I think that's what happened in this particular case, is that out of fear they forgot why it is that we're here, and the reason is to support and protect the farmers, beekeepers, and protect their interests using the cutting-edge leading science and asking the tough questions.
When you look back, Jonathan, did you ever... it must be quite surreal for you. I'm assuming you never would have been able to imagine 10 years ago that you would be at this position now.
No, absolutely not. Everything was going well, and I remain one of the most productive scientists in the agency. That just goes to show you. I mean, that's what we're here for, is to do research and to try to do it as well as we can. And
how does it make you feel?
I realized that I didn't have a safety net. I didn't have a plan B. And as my laboratory team and my family were all just, everybody that I cared about was getting hurt because of the research results that we were getting. And I didn't have anything I could do about it. There was nothing I could do about it. You're completely, yeah, you're dependent on your position. And that's when we decided, I mean, I have to have something else in place. And so that's why we ended up establishing this alternative, sort of a backup plan.
So you are now completely separated from the USDA. There are no connections there. You're no longer, I mean, it is finished.
We are in transition right now. We're discussing the USDA expressed interest. Well, the judge who's in charge of the whistleblower retaliation complaint suggested that we settle, and we're in those discussions right now. But we'll see. Again, the goal of this was to raise awareness, and so that's not on the table as something that we're going to be backing away from. Scientists need, society needs their scientists to have complete freedom to discuss what needs to be discussed. I mean, it's no different than freedom of speech. Yeah. Why should federal scientists not have that basic human right?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, just a few years ago, the word whistleblower was one used to demonize an individual. I think now whistleblower is seen in a very much different light, and that is one which is of respect and gratitude, hopefully, by the thinking public to somebody who's prepared to put their whole career and potentially the life of their own lives and the life of their family on the line for something that is important. And perhaps this is one of the most important issues that we have facing us at the moment.
Yeah, this wasn't a decision for career advancement, that's for sure. I do believe that it was a fight worth having.
Yeah.
And I hope that at the end of the day we can have a better system as a result of it.
And what do you think, Jonathan, when you imagine that there are individuals out there who head up corporations whose sole existence in this short space of time that each of us as an individual has on this planet, their whole being is made up of chasing the profit and the power and the what does that make you feel about our, you know, other people, that they're prepared to put the well-being and the future of our children's food, our children's planet, on the line for the profits of their current company?
Well, I think that everybody has a responsibility to educate themselves and stand up for what they believe is right. And so all of your listeners can, you make decisions every day, and those decisions have implications. And I would just really encourage you to stand up for what you think is the right thing to do. And under those circumstances, then the large players, the politics and the decision makers have suddenly less power, don't they?
I think that's very well said. Jonathan Lundgren is the name of the gentleman you're listening to, scientist turned whistleblower through necessity, essentially. And there are numbers of sites by using search engines where you can find Jonathan's names and all sorts of petitions and so on. So I really do urge you, this is such a crucially important issue regarding the right that we have to a healthy environment. Jonathan?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
No, absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us today. We wish you all the best, and perhaps we'll speak to you for an update in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, I'd appreciate that. Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.